we left off on the bottom of Chesam and Aleph. We had just discussed, and we've continued to discuss, the question of does the Baal Hametzar, does the Matzron, have some type of a kinyan in the field of the Mocher, subject obviously to the condition that he eventually exercises his right of Dina de Bar Metzra. So that's what we had discussed last, and I'm sure we're going to still revisit it some. But in the meantime, let's start with Kufches Amar Al, four lines from the bottom. Elimelech, can I ask you to Chasan? Chasan, honor us with the reading. Okay. Beginning of the line. From Zvan B'Masan on Kufches Amar Al. Four lines from the bottom. A page, not from the where they get wide. I'm sorry, did we read the previous Zvan or no? No. What? Okay, I'm sorry. Let me take you back two lines before we started. Zvan de Meir Vishavi Masan. So what does that mean? Right, so basically the Lokeach is a bargain shopper, and he got the field at a discount, however he did. And now the question is, how much does the... how much does the Matzron have to pay him? Now, based upon the logic of what we just saw before, the answer should be, well, how much did he have to pay him? Whatever he paid for it, which is 100. So the Gemara, but obviously the Lokeach is saying, hey, I got such a bargain. You shouldn't, the fact that I have that talent doesn't mean you should automatically get it. So the Gemara says, how do you decide? So basically, if this person is remarkably talented and only he could get that bargain discount, for whatever reasons the Mokar likes him, so basically, what grounds does the... I mean, this is an interesting question. I don't think it's really... I haven't seen it explored. Why should... In other words, we're saying that if I had gone to buy the field from Yoni, he would have charged me 200. But you get a special chassan's discount, and therefore he's going to sell you for 100. So why? The question is, why do I have to pay you 200? I understand what the Gemara is saying, but it doesn't really explain why. The Gemara is saying, because if I had gone to buy it, I would pay 200. So why don't we just say that I'm smart, I hired a guy who's good at buying. Ephraim? You're just stealing my language, throwing it back at me. Well, I'm sorry? I think you have to say it a little differently. You have to basically say, if you're going to be my shaliach, so normally, if you can do the same thing that I can do, so it's a tiny bit of tercha, that's not a big deal. But if you have a particular skill that I don't have, or a particular position I have, and you're utilizing that, and now you're my shaliach, maybe indeed I do have to compensate you for that, because only you, basically, the discount of $100 was really in effect given to you. Not, I don't know if you saved me time paying for shlichus, but basically, that $100 was essentially a matana to you. That's why he sold you the land for $100, because he likes you. He wouldn't have done that for anybody else. So maybe that's a better way to say it. I wouldn't even say paying for shlichus. But But basically, that $100 is a matana, and then he gave through, and then he by giving you the field for only $100 in payments. So when I go in and buy the field at this point, so the cost of the field is $200, and therefore that's in effect that's what you paid for it. You paid for $100 of cash and $100 of goodwill that you cashed in on, because that's why he gave it to you. And therefore, I have to compensate. I have to pay the $200, because in effect, you paid $200, right? You're saying he, or that's in maybe a different way of saying, yeah, let's say he goes somewhere else and he. No, I'll tell you why that's a problem. That's a very, you're saying it makes more sense than what I'm saying, but you're wrong. What's that? Correct. In other words, if this guy is giving a discount on his field, this guy is giving a discount on his field to everybody, so he probably can't get that discount from anybody else. So that really raises the question of why Dina de Bar Metzer applies here at all. Right? The lokeach is not supposed to be nifsad, just because, so your suggestion is so good it undermines the entire din. Right, you'd almost have, yes, Gabe.
Why can't you say it's like a matana? I mean, he is willing to sell the field if he sold it.
No.
But he gave it to this guy. He seems like he gave this guy $100 matana.
No, that's what I said. Right, in other words, basically, when Elimelech bought the field from Yoni, and Yoni likes Elimelech so much, Elimelech gave Yoni $100 of cash and $100 of goodwill, meaning in exchange Yoni's giving matana. I agree. The problem with what Ephraim is saying is that his suggestion is so good that it undermines the entire din. I'm sorry? He asked that question. And he... I would answer the question by saying you have to. I mean, it may be forcing and twisting the Gemara. Then in Echonami, he can find. In other words, you. In fact, it would almost do away with the. I guess this is your teretz. You would say that. In other words, if Yoni is willing to give only Elimelech the discount, it means Yoni could get 200 people get $200 for fields like this. But he likes Elimelech. That's a gift to Elimelech. Whereas if anybody could get the discount, then by definition. This is against what you're saying. Elimelech will go somewhere else and get another field like that because for whatever reason, real estate's on sale now. That's what I think maybe you have to read. Because the question is so good, right? There has to be a way. So I think that's true, right? In other words, Dina de Bar Metzra is a chiyuv of the lokeach. The lokeach doesn't have to have hefsed because of that. We say to the lokeach, why buy this field? Go buy the other field. Well, if the answer is the other field cost me twice as much or cost me more, then the answer is that's why I buy this field. It's not unless you say Asher Batov anymore. So probably you have to say something like that. You have to say, you know, the only problem is that you also have to say that somehow you could get another field. In other words, you almost have to say this field maybe really is worth $100. Elsewhere, but Yoni demands a lot. She's like a Beit HaMaryon, so he demands a lot of money for his fields. So if he really is like everybody else, and he'll sell it for $100. I mean, the only problem is the Gemara says it's shavah masan. So what makes it shavah masan? I don't know. The questions are better than the answers. Okay, let's look at the next scenario. Lemelech, go ahead. So this is a general principle. When you send a shaliach, let's say, to buy something for you, so normally we say shlucha shaladim kemaso. But if the shaliach fouls up, you're able to say you're not my shaliach. You didn't do your proper shlichus, right? Shaliach shashina mishlichus. So it's not a shaliach. So this din, by the way, comes up in Hilchos Me'ilah, of all strange places. Why does it come up in Hilchos Me'ilah? Because there are three areas in Halacha where we say Yeshliach L'Dvar Avera. And one of them happens to be Me'ilah. So if I tell my Shaliach to go get me that Chifetz from the window, from the back window, and that Chifetz belongs to me, and he goes and he brings the Chifetz from one window in front of it, and that's one's Hekdesh, he takes that one, I'm not Moel, he's Moel. If I had asked him to bring that one, and he brings that one, and let's assume for the moment we're both Shogeg, to keep it simple, so then I am Moel, even though in Shalech HaDvar Avera, there is Yeshliach HaDvar by Me'ilah. So it's in that context that's this is basically, it's not, I don't know if this is the where they use this formulation, but that's the idea that a shaliach is a mishana mishlichusa who messes up is not considered a shaliach. So here the Gemara says that you would have thought that you could say you're not my shaliach. So that's what the havamina would be. So Amar Lei. Okay, so the answer is a very bizarre answer. It's a very, very, very bizarre. What is the din? What happens here? What would happen here if he went ahead and he bought that field for 200, it was only worth 100? Lemaisa, what's the din then? I sent Ari, who is, I didn't send him, he went on his own. He bought the field next that Tal was selling, and it's next to my property. Ari paid $200, because Tal, you know, went to the Sysim School of Business. He learned a thing or two. So the field was worth $100, but he sold, he learned a good business. He sold it to Ari for $200. So, what is the din lamaisa now? What happens? Let's say I were to say, "Litakune shadartich velo laavuse." It means literally, by the way, "litakune" means to fix things for benefit. Shadartich is, you know, the Bavli Aramaic shadar. I sent you, and not to mess things up. So, what would it then be? Right? I'm sorry? Yeah, I would have just said it belongs to the lokeach. Why? Well, what's the alternative? I'm sorry? Well, yeah, but why can the mekach not be batel? Why can't it be batel? Ari paid 200 for tal. And if the mekach would be batel, what would happen? What do you think would happen then? What's next if the Mekach is batel, guys?
Give back the money.
Okay, fine. He gives back the money. Tal gives back the money. What next? What's that? Well, presumably, I'm going to go to Tal and say, okay, now I want to buy the field. So the answer is that's ridiculous. Why? Because if Ari wants to buy the field for $200 from Tal, guess what I have to do? If I want the field, I have to match that. Because Tal, the Mocher, does not have to lose because of Dina de Bar Mitzvah. That's one of the clones that's going to come up. So the formulation of the Gemara is very odd. The Gemara then says by saying no. Eino no la karkos. What is eino no la karkos? What should it mean here? What is eino no la karkos mean on its own terms? What is ono? Start with that. Elimelech. Oh, you just stepped on a minefield there. It's against the Perush Ramban al Torah, and it's probably the Ramban is right. It's hard to argue with the Ramban. It's not what Eino Nala Karkos means. Apparently you studied real estate in Sisens. Rami?
The other translation for that I know is price gouging, but I'm not sure how that's
Price gouging is not onah almost definitionally, because generally speaking, when you price, well, it could be, but most of the time when we're price gouged, we know we're being price gouged, and we choose to buy it anyway. That's not onah. Onah implies deception. Okay?
Overcharged by a certain amount, the person is not aware of it. So if it's less than a sixth, then it's a good sale. If it's a sixth, then you have to get the value back, which is also a good sale.
Someone who learned Mishnayos. So there are three steps in onah. If you cheat less than a sixth, it's always also to cheat elamah. That's the point the Ramban makes in the beginning of Parshas Behar. Of course, Yeshua Nalak HaKosh, you violate the Yisrael Lassan HaShem Yisrael. The question is, do the penalties of onah apply? The standard penalties of onah by Mithalpalim are onah of less than a sixth, however you calculate what a sixth means. Onah of less than a sixth, we say the Mekach is Kayim, and as it is, and you don't give the money, you have to give the money back. I mean, if you overcharge, but if you're smart, in fact, this comes up in the Mishnayos actually. If you're smart, if you're smart and you're evil, you overcharge less than a sixth, enough that the Mekach will be kind enough to pay back the money. If you overcharge a sixth, however you define that, then you have to, the Mekach stands, neither party has the right exclusively to be mevatel the sale, but you have to pay back the difference. And if it's more than a sixth, there's what we call bitul hamekach. Now, what does bitul hamekach mean? I ripped Ben Sion off. I sold him his computer. Told him that computer is worth $5,000. And Ben Sion naively trusted me. And he paid me $5,000. It turned out the computer is worth $1,000. So what's the din? Ben Sion has one of two. I have no choice. What are Ben Sion's choices? Well, let's say in the interim, the computer when I sold it to him was worth $1,000. I sold it to him for $5,000. The computer happens to be worth $3,000 now. It was a special edition computer. And now the collectors are after it. It's an NFT computer, even though that's not possible. Okay. So, the world has gone off the rails. Just a side comment. Okay. What are Ben Sion's choices now? Ephraim? Right. Ben Sion can either say, give me back my $5,000 and here is the computer back, or he can say, I'll keep it as it is. In other words, Bitul HaMekach, he doesn't have the right to say, I'll tell you what, give me $4,000 back and then I'm going to keep the computer, which is worth $2,000 more than it was. And even if it wasn't, it's still worth $1,000. He still doesn't have, if when there's Bitul HaMekach, he has a choice to either be Mevatel the Mekach or just keep it as it is. I don't have the choice. I can't turn around, Let's say I sold Ben Sion the computer for $5,000 and now his NFT computer is worth $10,000. And I go, Ben Sion, I'm sorry. I did such a terrible thing. I cheated you when I sold you the computer. I ripped you off big time. My apologies. I'd like to give you back your money. And Ben Sion will tell me, jump out the window. Except for Ben Sion, you weren't here when this happened. We discovered the windows do open, but not enough to throw someone out. They open them for us. So just so you know, if you've lived with that fear for years now, Baruch Hashem, you don't have to live with it anymore. So in this case, when Ari was ripped off by Tal, sorry Tal, I don't mean to make you the bad guy here. When Ari was ripped off by Tal, so Ari can say, listen, I'm willing to buy the field from Tal for $2,000. And if you want the field, you're going to have to give that to me. Otherwise, I can't say, no. Tal, you ripped them off. The sale shouldn't stand. Give it back to Tal. Now you have to sell me the field for $1,000. It doesn't work that way. So that's really what the Gemara should have said. When it says, L'takuni shadatich l'avusei, what it really means is that, you can't, I mean, what would that even mean here? Ari, they don't have to Tal doesn't have to sell it, and Ari doesn't have to pay what I think the price should be. I understand the Gemara says, quotes from Nachum, "Ein onah l'karkos," which means Elimelech, the penalties of onah don't apply. There's a Yerushalmi apparently that says that I think that 50% is already onah by karkos, but the Rishonim point to, I think this Gemara and reject, show that it's against the Bavli. There's no penalty of onah. Even if I sold you, if I owned a piece of the Brooklyn Bridge, if I actually did own it, and I sold it to you for $1 million, and even though my three bricks in the Brooklyn Bridge were only worth only worth $10,000, there's no onala karkos. No, I'm a Russia. I'm a ganav in a certain way, but I don't have to pay anything. There's no onala karkos. So the issue of onala karkos is an issue between Tal and Ari. It has nothing to do with me, the matzron. Right? Because Tal doesn't have to sell the land. Ari can choose to pay whatever outrageous price he wants to, if he chooses to do so. If there were onala karkos, all it would mean is that Ari has the option to say to Tal, give me my money back, and now we're back to square one. So it's kind of, it's very odd the way the Gemara is almost speaking like, Ari is my shaliach, but I want to say, Ari, you're an invalid shaliach, because you changed the shlifas. One second, not in this case. The Gemara in Ksubos, I think, basically says this. It compares this. A different case is where I sent Ari to go buy something from me, and he paid twice the price. And I said, Rebbe, I brought you the milk back. It was, how much were they charging the bega? $12.50 for the gallon. I said, you're out of your mind? $12.50 for a gallon of milk? A gallon of milk is not worth more than $5. I sent you to do it properly. You've messed up. Your problem. It's your milk now. You can deal with the bodega owner. That works when I appoint you as a shaliach with a specific mission, and if you violate the mission. But here, it doesn't. It's almost as the Gemara is using a melitza. It doesn't really mean this, any of this literally, because it doesn't apply to this case. Ephraim. Okay. Well, firstly, if you pay twice the price, that might be 100%. It really, I think that would be twice. I think that where we would, the possible range of half would be $100 piece of karka. You sold it for me either. You're right. It could be if it's milabar, it would be exactly that. But the. Yes, but at the end of the day, what the Gemara is saying is I have to pay 200 to Ari. Now, even if it were exactly, the Shir Honel, where it's not Bitul Mecca, we're saying I still have to pay him the full 200. I don't get. Right, the point of the Gemara is that there is no Hasar Asma. There's no Hasar Asma and there's no Bitul Mecca by Karka. That's what it means, in onala karkos. So bottom line is, if there were onala karkos, granted the mekach could stand, but somehow the implication would be is that $100 he would get back, and I would only pay $100.
And then it wouldn't be that.
Correct. I hear what you're saying. Okay. I guess, so that's another reason why it's a melitza. In other words, none of this fits here. It doesn't really. Reb Nachman is using language that isn't precise. You have this elsewhere. That's what prompts the Gemara in Ksubos, Daf Sadi Gimel, to try to compare this to the case where you send the shaliach to do something on your behalf.
Okay, the way I'm reading it, the Rashi point of Nachman would essentially be saying that in this case it would stand. Backwards. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. It's not unheard of when the Gemara will use. A melitza, but both of these are effectively being used as melitzas here. I mean, I don't understand really. Again, in on all the karkos is between Tal and Ari. It's not between me and the two of them. The way it's taken in the Rishonim, some of them say it is in on all the karkos, meaning it's worth that. In other words, we say that in on all the karkos is a reason that's used to say a piece of land is worth whatever you sell it for, which is not exactly true. But it's kind of true. It doesn't mean it's mutter to do that if you're deceiving the party on the one hand, but what it does mean is that when you sell it, we say that the land is worth anything you sell it for, and therefore the mekach stands as is. So again, that might be true in general by an ol karkos. Here, if that's why, and that's my point, is let's say yesh on ol karkos. What am I going to say? If Ari's happy to let it go with Tal, what am I going to do? And I can't force Tal to sell me the land for $100. That's clear. If we were to turn around and tell Ari and Tal, the mekach is bakel, even though you both consent to it standing, because you overcharged them twice, Tal, and now Tal has this field, Tal doesn't have to sell me the field for $100. You can say, I'm mad at you. You ruined my enterprise here. Go jump in the lake. That's what Talkin say to me. So that's what's so odd about this. Even if the, in other words, if this, I don't think you can take this literally. If Yesh on Alek Arpos, how would that change anything? Okay.
Why are we not supposed to say 100?
I'm sorry?
Why are we not supposed to say 100 and take the field?
Well, Tal doesn't have to sell the field for 100.
Why not?
Because he doesn't have to sell the field unless he gets the price he wants. The problem with, again, the invocation of Yesh Ona Eino Lekarkos implies he deceived Ari. And the halacha is that if Ari bought it for that price, that sale is binding. Right, so we're saying, in other words, I'm asked, what's bothering me is, what's the havamina that I'm going to pay less to Ari? And then he's going to give that back to Tal. In other words, if you said Bittel Hamekach, because he overcharged him, and Yesh Ona Lekarkos, if it were Yesh Ona Lekarkos, so basically, the field would go back to Tal, and the money would go back to Ari, and we're back to square one. It's not that I get it. Right? Normally, in other words, if Ari bought the field for $200 from Tal, and I'm not interested in the field, I have no sheikhs here. I don't care, Ari. You're a crummy buyer. You know, I'm glad you're not my real estate agent. Then you just overpay Tal. You deal with him. Right. Normally, what happens is I send you as my shaliach to buy a field, and you pay twice the amount that I say. I can say le takuni shadati lavuse. I made you my shaliach to buy the field at an appropriate price. By the way, presumably, I don't remember if the Gemara Ksubas has, if the Gemara invokes that there. It's in Sadi Gimel, right? Where is that Gemara? Okay. Did I make it up? Is it Sadi Tesamad Beis? No. Maybe. Why am I not seeing it now? I mean, Tosis explains the difference between the two Gemaras. Right, the Gemara says the Feirish, that even though there's no Ona L'Karkos, normally there's no Ona L'Karkos, if I send you as a Shaliach to buy Karka for me, and you pay more than the Karka's worth, it doesn't even matter how much more, even if it's 10%, I can say, L'Takuni Shadartich V'lo L'Avuse. I can say that. Here, again, you can't say L'Takuni Shadartich L'Avuse, because my goal is not to be mevatel the shlichus. If I'm mevatel the shlichus, I don't have the land. My goal here is to have the mekach stand, but I want a cheaper price. It doesn't work that way. If I have a question,
could be that
no, so again, that would just be. I mean, again, you want to say that exactly my question is the answer to the Gemara. That he don't know the karkos, therefore Tal's sale to Ari is in fact a binding sale, and Tal can say, listen, it can't come at the cost to me.
Or to anyone else, he'll be able to trick someone else into buying it.
Well, he might not be able to, he's already got his victim. Right? So, again, it's a very strange way of getting to Hesed Democher. It's a very strange way of putting it, but that might be the case. I mean, that's the way of picking my question and turning it into the answer. Right, it's just odd. The Gemara says, "Mao detaim savor mina matzi amar le takuni shazach lavuse." Now, the way Tosis and Ksubas understand the teres is it's not because they don't know the karkos; it's because it's a totally different kind of shlichus. One, I send you to do something by half; you mess up the shlichus, you're not my shaliach. Here, I have a choice here. I can either have you be my shaliach or not have me be my shaliach. If you are my shaliach, then guess what? You just pay 200, I owe you 200. If you're not my shaliach, I can't get the karka. So the formulation, the din makes perfect sense, but the way that where it gets to it in terms of its language formulation is a little bit striking. A little bit hard to understand. Okay. Next. No shortages of difficulties here. Questions still in there? No. Okay. Go ahead, Elinor. All right, so this is a really important Gemara for the Rishonim. Because this serves to be, this serves essentially as a rule generator, a very a crucial rule in all Dina de Bar Mitzvah Shailas. Right? Some of you may think that we've only become clever recently. Clever not in a good way. But in fact, this trait of cleverness has existed amongst the Jewish people, Mishanu Kadmonios. So what happens here? Yitzchak has a large area of land. And in the middle of this land, we could have two kinds of land. We could have uniform land that's all Beninis, it's all Ibis, it's all Ziboris, it's, you know, all the same. Or we could have parts of this land that are Ibis and Beninis and Ziboris, or I don't know what the rest of the land is, but you could have patches that are distinct from one another. So, I go to Yitzchak and I buy a piece of land in the middle of his land. Why am I doing that? Well, you work for Goldman Sachs and then you see what happens. Maybe thinking such corrupt thoughts. No, because it's a beautiful piece of land and Yitzchak is a dear Talmud and I want to be surrounded by his lands because it's nice. And I'll say Shalom Aleichem every morning. Wonderful. That's one possibility. Alternatively, I could have gone to work at Goldman Sachs. And then I said, I see leverage here. So what am I going to do? I'm going to buy this field in the middle of Yitzchak's thing. And, I wait a little bit. And then I say, okay, now Yitzchak, I'd like to buy the rest of your field. Yitzchak says, sure. So why did I do it this way? Because if I had bought the field in one shot, Yitzchak has neighbors around it. Nisim lives on one side, and Yoni lives on another. Elimelech lives on another. And Rami lives on another. And so I go and buy this field in the middle. And then if I bought it all in one shot, so any one of the four of them come and say, thank you very much, Rebbe, but, you know, I am a Matzron, we're a Matzron. Thank you, we'll take that field, here's your money. So I'm so clever, and I figured out, if I buy a field in the middle first, now I'm a Matzron, just like Yoni and Nisim and Elimelech and Rami. And so, since I'm there first, I strike while the iron is hot, and in the dark of the night, when no one is looking, I go to Yitzchak and say, okay, here's the cash, I got the field. I subverted Dina de Bar Mitzvah. So the Gemara is going to basically, what does the Gemara say? What's the din here? Chazinan. Okay, so what does it mean? If it's Ziboris or if it's Ibis, which one? If it is distinct, as Rashi explains. If this patch of land that I bought from Yitzchak stands out, I didn't just pick, you know, Dalaramas, the Mov Yitzchak's land, any Dalaramas. I wanted, you can see, I picked out a specific field. So then the sale is valid, and if I were to buy the rest, I could get it first on Dina de Bar Mitzvah. Whereas, if we see that this is purely a stunt, it's purely a harama to get around the din of Dina de Bar Mitzvah, so then, what is the din? Machlokas HaRishon. Some Rishonim say that the sale on the piece of that land is valid, but when I try to go buy the rest, Basin says to me, I don't think so. Rashi writes on the top, Ilo iarume kamarim, imbasi likach etlam isalkuni, therefore ekna ni besa ve'emsa ve'eya ni matzran l'charuach, ve'ekna ni acharichin l'cholzad, Beis Din comes to me right now, or one of you, Yoni or Nisim or Rami or Elimelech, come to me armed with a statement from Beis Din saying, nice try, but you can give the land back now because you're not a Bar Mitzvah and you're trying to insert yourself into become a Bar Mitzvah here, and that is not okay. That's not okay. And if Yitzchak really wants to sell this piece of land, this little inner piece of land, you know what he's going to have to do probably? He'll sell it to one of the Matzronim, even though it's not directly, if they want, if it's not directly adjacent. I don't know. Would we even let him do that? I don't know. But bottom line is that we will stamp out any haramas. Even for other Rishonim, you don't have to stamp it out immediately, but the rest of the field, you know, will be subject to the rules. Certainly, I don't know what happens later, but certainly now we're not misalik him from the field. Ephraim? So presumably he has to offer to the Matzronim. if he really wants to sell that part of the field, Matsaranim get right of first refusal. And they have to decide whether it's worth it to, because what they're really buying in effect is futures on that field, that right to the Matsaranis. I think so. So the Rishonim will cite this in the other tshuvas. Like what, there's one tshuva, I forget, this is the tshuva of either the Rashba or the Rif, or both, there might be similar cases, where a man decided to, he wanted to buy a field where he wasn't the Matsaran. So he bought the field in the name of his wife, or his wife bought the field, let's put it that way, to keep it neutral. His wife bought the field. And if you got to the end of the Gemara, what you know is that Isha and Yasme and who was the last one? Shutve, I'll leave it there. Isha and Yasme, there's no Dina de Bar Mitzvah. Why is there no Dina de Bar Mitzvah for an Isha? But when it means no Dina de Bar Mitzvah, if an Isha buys the Karka, the Matzran can't be Masalik Isha. What did we, this is this chivalry? That's what this is. I mean, the answer is yes. Kind of is. Is that once upon a time, and I wonder whether this din still applies today. It might actually still. In law, women might be equal, but there is persistent and pervasive discrimination in all sorts of ways still against women in the sphere of economics. If you ever wondered, it's we would say in the base medrash, it's Miraf Sinegra. You know what that phrase means? Have you heard the phrase, Ephraim? Oh, I can't believe that. Like in Neri Sof, it's Miraf Sinegra. I forget where the phrase is. It means it causes the roof to collapse. It means it's crazy. Like the Shmua is Miraf Sinegra. Nothing makes sense. It doesn't fit. But you might find it's hard to believe, but you'll have situations where they're introducing multiple doctors, and they'll say Dr. So-and-so, Dr. So-and-so, Lisa, and Dr. So-and-so. I know that it's kind of mind-boggling, but this kind of thing actually persists. People treat women differently, treat them condescendingly in all sorts of economic spheres. So I don't know if it's really changed, ironically. I don't know if it's really changed, but it certainly has changed to some extent. But in the time of the Gemara, it would have been very hard for a woman. She was not someone who would have been accustomed to really going around and wheeling and dealing in real estate. And therefore, for her, it's a big sacrifice to ask her to go buy another field. She's already bought this field. So in the same thing for Yasme, it's hard for them to be Torah in the way that would for a man to be Torah. So I have a suspicion this din does not quite have the full application today if we were flying, because things have changed to a degree. But maybe not. So this guy goes, and he's very clever. He has his wife buy the field. So the Rishonim, you know, say that we have to figure out, it's also in Truva Rigash, you have to figure out now what's really going on. Is this just a stunt? Or is it really the wife who's buying the field? If it's really the wife who's buying the field, that's one thing. In fact, there are some Rishonim who say that the din of Dina de Bar Mitzvah that doesn't apply to Isha does not apply to an Eishes Ish. It only applies to an Almana or to a Penuya. But an Eishes Ish, I don't know if that's the, I think the better term here would be a Bu'ulas Baal. If she's got a husband, then she's not in that position. He can go do it for her. But other Rishonim say no, that the same din applies to a Bu'ulas Baal as it does to a Pamiya or to an Almana. Except that you have to check and see what's going on. Is this a harama? Or is this really, she's actually willing and dealing in real estate? And if it is the latter, so then there's no Dina de Bar Mitzvah by Nisha, she's not mechuyevus to give up the field. If we suspect that it's the husband, if we have grounds for thinking if the husband is doing it, then we're going to allow Dina de Bar Mitzvah to proceed. Okay. Next, it doesn't get easier. A matana lespa mishum dina de bar mitzvah. Whoa, don't go anywhere. Why? Well, firstly, if matana had a dina de bar mitzvah, how would it work?
Rather buy it for you than you give this for free.
Okay, that's one way, but let's say the owner of the land says, I'm not interested in selling it. So you could say that's why Dina de Bar Mitzvah doesn't apply, but there would be another solution to the problem, which is you go to the Mekabel Matana and say, look, the reality is that a matana is like a mecher. You don't just give something to somebody for no particular reason. And if they didn't do something for you, if there's no expectation they would do something for you, then you would give them a gift. Right? Nor most people don't go around giving gifts for nothing. When you give a gift to your spouse, it's not, it's an act done out of love, but it's not something that is not requited in some way. Right? When one spouse always gives to the other, eventually, that's a marriage that tends to fall apart. Or in some ways, it may be bordering on the abusive, you know, maybe a passive kind of abuse. So every relationship, you don't do a tit for tat, or that's also poisonous to a relationship. Well, you gave me a $100 gift, and I gave you a $200 gift. How can that be? But bottom line is that gifts are never given for free. There's always something. There's always a quid pro quo, even if it's not specific and it's not definitive. And that's normal social interaction of friendships, right? You do things for people. You're not a very good friend if you're just keeping a ledger of things that you did for someone. You might want to keep a ledger of things they did for you, so you remind yourself to be a gomel chesed in response. But you don't keep a tab exactly. But a matana is not done b'chinam generally. A matana is not done b'chinam. So when Elimelech receives this field from Nisan, so it's because there's something that Elimelech, even intangible, has done, is doing, will do for Nisan. So if I wanted to take that field from Elimelech, well, what would I have to do? I'd have to pay Elimelech the value of the field and say, this is the gift that Nisan gave you. It's still your gift. You're still getting something. And I will now take the field. Because you can always go buy another field at a particular place. So why does Dina de Bar Mitzvah not apply by Matana? And the Gemara, by the way, adds a Tanai. What is the Tanai? The next line. So what does it mean, I kasef lo achrayus? If this proper achrayus is Nisim says Elimelech, I'm giving you this land as a gift, and should a creditor come along and seize this land, I will replace the gift for you. So if you write achrayus, then there is the end of the Bar Mitzvah. Why? It's really a why on both. The second one's easier to answer than the first. What's the answer? Why is there Dina de Bar Mitzvah when there's Achrayus? Afraid? Adarabba, if there's no Achrayus, there's even less Pseid of the Mocha. He could do that even if there's no achrayus. No, he's stopping him. So the Rishonim seem to assume pe'echad that when there is achrayus, that means it was really a mecher. Because normally people don't give achrayus on a matana. Like, we have a discussion in the Gemara whether achrayus to'u soferhu. Supposing I borrow money from Ben Sion, and the sofer forgets to write in the shtar. Kol nifsen de islin achron ravai lefnam and hon shtar halva da, etc., etc. He forgot to write in achrayis karkos. He forgot to write in, you know, a shibud karkos. So there's a machlokus with achrayis is to sofer. Whether if it doesn't say, the famous is no achrayis, is there a sin to be achrayis? Machlokus are bearing the chacham. And we assume achrayus is definitely Tos Sofer B'Halva. What about by a Mecher? Because if I sell you something and then it gets seized, it could be seized either because it wasn't mine, or and really a proper title, or it could be seized because a creditor seized it. I did have proper title. So there, there's a discussion also. It might be it's Tau Sofer as well. I don't remember how the sugya plays out. But I'm pretty sure by Matana, there's no such thing as Matana Achrayev's Tau Sofer. You don't normally write, I gave you a gift. Okay, look, if it turns out that you can't hang on to it, the world is not going to come to an end. The world, as we say, easy come, easy go. So the Rishonim say here that when there is Achrayus, it looks like it's really just a harama of a mecher. And it might very well be according to some Rishonim, if in fact it really was a matana, but you get Achrayus anyway, it's super generous, that then in Echanami, Din the Maritzer doesn't apply. But I really want to know, why is it by a matana, Din of the Bar Mitzvah doesn't apply? I didn't notice anything, any explanations. Rashi, I don't think, says anything. And I didn't notice in going through the Rishonim anybody explain why. I'm sure I missed it, but what might your thoughts be about this? Why would there be no Achrayus? Why would there be no Din of the Bar Mitzvah by a matana? And when we say if there's Achrayus, when I first saw the Gemara about Achrayus, I thought that if there's Achrayus, it defines it as a Mecher, which really makes no sense. It doesn't define it as a Mecher. And that's why the Rishonim say that the only reason why Achrayus makes Din of the Bar Mitzvah, Ariel, you'll answer first. The only reason why Achrayus makes Din of the Bar Mitzvah is because it's really a sale, and it's a cover up, it's a harama. So why should there be no Din of the Bar Mitzvah, Ari?
Matzron is chaser for sure, but the person receiving the gift would also be chaser, yeah.
I think you're on the right track, but I'm going to respond at least the ways you formulate it. But the deal is the Matzron, the Lokeach, is going to get cash instead. He's going to get the same value. The question is whether he got a piece of land or got the cash. And again, I want to be clear that if there were deemed by Matzron, it's not that I take the karka because he's such a nice guy and he's giving away land, so I'll take the land. No, it means I will pay the gift recipient so he will get the same value and I will get the land. Because he could always take that cash and buy another piece of land. Ali Melech.
Everything is so objective and fungible, then we say to whoever is most convenient has the right to make that purchase. But once we're dealing with something that's on the level of personal, this is a gift from one to the other, and we're taking it out of that kind of objective, cash-oriented mindset, then it no longer makes sense to say we're going to give precedence to the person who makes the most sense. Because it's not only about
you're almost there, Ephraim. No, he goes and buys every day in the Bar Mitzvah. You give him cash, and he goes and buys another karka. Maybe. I think there's a bit. Yeah, and?
Here, gave it him because he wants the halachah to happen. And if you now are third and third in our answer, you're potentially massive.
Well, so he'll have another piece of land.
Now he loses two pieces of land.
He'll go take the cash. I give you this piece of land. He goes, takes the land from you, gives you cash, you go buy a different piece of land, that's all.
We're closing the social tomorrow, but I think it's not considered a preference to sell a gift and buy something else with
that. Now you're going down a different... I'll just present it from a different, but I'll tell you why I don't agree with your formulation. I'll give you what I think the correct formulation is. I don't agree with your formulation because it's normally not appropriate to sell a gift that someone gives you and buy something else because it's a little bit patch and punim. It's like you gave a gift and just accept it and smile. But if I'm selling it here only because the halacha says, the end of the bar mitzvah, so then it's even better. Not only did you give me a gift, a generous gift, and I'll wind up with a piece of karka, but I did a mitzvah in the process as well. Shalom al Yisrael. But I want to present it. You could be right. I want Yoni? Why? No, I don't think it's from... I want to explain, from the vantage point of the lokach. Because if we're going to talk about Dina de Bar Mitzvah, the question is, we have to assume that the mocher has no hefzed, and we have to assume the lokach has no hefzed. I want to look at just the lokach for a second. I can think about this on a very personal level. So I have a family member who every year, for my birthday, gives me a gift. Some years I really don't know what I want, and I don't really need anything. So, they might finally give up and just give me cash. Okay, and what do I do with the cash? I'll put it in the bank, maybe I'll buy something, maybe eventually I'll buy something. On the other hand, on the occasions that I had wanted something, I have a particular item in mind. So every time I use that thing, happens to be a running watch, every time I use that thing, I would think about the person who gave me the gift. Right? The purpose of the gift is to create some kind of connection, appreciation. It's for things done, but it's to create a bond. And if I don't have that karka, it's not the same thing as I now take the cash. I could buy another piece of karka. That wasn't your karka that you gave me. That's some other karka, but I took the substitute. So it may very well be, and I think that both Yoni, both Elimelech and Ephraim were kind of on, that's basically the same idea. Yoni, yours may not be so different either. Right? The idea that by a matana, because it's not just a commercial transaction, it's a social transaction, so it's not shayach to say dina de bar mitzvah. There's hesed de mocher and hesed de lokeach. And that's why the presence of achrayus doesn't mean, oh, well now, it's not that it's a matana bought, achrayus somehow changes things. No. Once it's achrayus, we're a little suspicious that playing games, that really it's a mecher. That's why you accept that achrayus, right? Why would you accept? Matan is easy come, easy go. A mecher, if you're actually paying him under the table, but pretending it's a matana, well, you know, then I understand why you give him achrayus, because he doesn't want to buy it if he doesn't have an insurance rider on it. Yes, Eli Miller. Okay, but that's true, by the way, even if someone could see, well, that would be a reason why achrayus might even be a good thing in terms of, and still no dina de bar mitzvah. Okay, fine, fine. Ephraim? Okay. So anyway, so I think I'm what's surprising to me is that the Rishonim don't, at least that I see, don't really comment on it. Now maybe because they think this is so obvious, so maybe we're correct, or maybe there's a different obvious reason that they take it sort of granted that by matanas don't do that by mitzvah. But obviously it doesn't mean that I could go take it for nothing. It would mean I would have to pay the mekabel matana for the value where they could then go replace it with a different one. Okay. Next. Work in your heart, Ellie, now. You skipped. I skipped one line. Okay. So I sell all of my land in one fell swoop. And I don't know if it has to be all my land, but it means certainly not just selling this piece of land. I'm selling multiple pieces of land. There's no din of the bar mitzvah. Now, I suspect if you dig, there are actually two days in Rishonim how to understand the particulars, but the logic is essentially the same thing. Explain. You don't have to explain both. Explain one approach. Why is it if I sell all my property, what is it that the Matzron is saying? And what is our response? Rami?
Just one of them was, the Matzron can say, I want the part of your property that abuts my field. And he stated that by dividing up the field like that, that's going to incur a loss on the person who's trying to sell the field, and we wouldn't make it.
Correct. In other words, as soon as you want to take only one field, and that is the easier one to deal with, I believe. Even though if the Matzron is Dafka only offering to take one field, the name that's the Matzron, then somebody else is going to back away. They don't want they want the whole package or they want nothing. So that comes at the cost to the Mocher. That comes at the cost to the Mocher. And therefore, we say it's an all or nothing deal. But that would allow the possibility, Rami, of what if the Bar Mitzvah says, I'll tell you what, I'll buy it all. You're selling it, and you want to buy it? Fine. I want the field next to mine. I'm willing to pay the rest. Then maybe it would work. I think there are Rishonim who say that doesn't work. In other words, once it's selling all the fields, if you have any kind of deed that Bar Mitzvah that could displace someone, it's going to make it harder to find a buyer in general. Okay, Eli Mela. Isn't
that? Why the Gemara hones in on Kol Nechasav doesn't seem to be consistent with that logic.
What do you think Kol Nechasav means?
The entirety of the property.
Of that property? So that's where the Rishonim, I think, say, Befeirush, that if all of his property is adjacent, even though it's separate fields, if you want to call it that, and this person offers to buy it all, then yeah, they can, for sure. That I think everybody agrees to.
What if he's selling half his property, and within that half, part of it would qualify for Bar Mitzvah and the rest of it? And you still have the same logic.
I agree, and I think it's Lav Dafka Kol Nechasav. I think the Svara says it's Lav Dafka Kol Nechasav. It means large numbers of fields. And again, I think that we've shown, I don't know if they say it, but I think it's clear we would apply it in. If you're being Mr. Clever and I'm selling the field on your Mitzvah and I'm selling two other small fields, so I can claim it's like Mochar Kol Nechasav, we're going to say, I don't think so. Right? But if I'm selling large tracts of land, and one of them happens to be next to your field, I can legitimately say I'm going to have trouble finding a buyer if certainly if you insist on only taking one field for sure, and maybe even if, maybe it's hard to find buyers in general when you're selling that amount of land. Now you can go to the next one. Go ahead. So firstly, what does this mean? Yitzhak has a field next to mine, and I want to buy it. But instead, he sells it to Josh. And what is Josh's relationship to this field that's next to mine? Yeah, I mean, he was the one who sold it to Yitzhak originally. So now he wants to buy it back. And I want to say, Josh, nice try, but you're not a neighbor anymore. I am. So Halacha says, there's no din of the Bar Mitzvah. Why? I don't think Rashi says anything. So I forget who points this as a raya in their general. It might be from Rambam and Rambam, I'm not sure. Ryan, do you remember? That tshuva, by the way, is, I'm almost certain, is that the tshuva? I thought it's quoted in the Beis Yosef. Somewhere it's quoted. So the explanation is that I know this is not very a Western style, but the Torah certainly understood that it's best when people not become dispossessed from their properties. When you read the Gemara Kedushin points, I think it's the Kedushin points out that there's a series of parshios and parshas Bahar that describes a person's spiritual descent. And if a person sinned, the first thing they're going to have to do is sell this. And if they don't do tshuva, then they'll have to sell that. And then eventually they're going to have to borrow money. And they're going to have to sell themselves, and they're going to sell themselves to sell themselves to a guy, etc. Like Avera Goreris, Avera just digs the hole deeper. The Torah set up a system in which land always goes back to the original owners. That's the idea. It's probably true today as well, that land is probably the most valuable asset. It's the most valuable asset for two reasons. One reason is because they're not making any more of it. I mean, they occasionally do with landfill in the water, in the ocean, but that's not a whole lot. And number two, more relevant, land might be one of the only things in this world that actually has objective value. You carrying any money in your wallet, Tal? Not anymore. You're like, your generation might almost be cashless. Who's got money in their wallet? Okay, Yoni. What is that money worth? Okay, let's say it's $20 on the bill. What is that? What is that worth? Well, it's the United States. It's Uncle Sam's money, right? $20. The answer is, what is that worth intrinsically? The answer is nothing. What is gold worth intrinsically? Virtually nothing. I mean, it's good for electronics. They use it in certain things in electronics, right? As jewelry, it's meaningless. It's worthless. I mean, I guess you could make it and sell it as jewelry. Fine. But still, the jewelry doesn't actually do anything for you. Let's accept that. Right? Why are most quantities of any value? The answer is social convention. Money is social convention. If people stop trusting it, economics and society will collapse. The government can print as much money as it likes, as long as people accept that money. As long as it has, what do they say, what backs the money? The full faith in something of the United States government. I'm not sure how much that's worth right now, but it's still maybe the most trustworthy in the world, but it's all a mirage. It's all a mirage. Like, land has inherent value. Food, it's perishable and you consume it, has inherent value. But money is just, it's one big pyramid scheme. I'm not William Jennings Bryan who wants to go back to whatever standard. I'm not arguing for the gold standard or the silver standard or whatever else it is. But point out that karka is inherently valuable, and the Torah does not want people displaced from their ancestral karka. It prevents the extreme wealth, and it prevents extreme poverty, which I think is the real concern. And I think the Torah has... I don't think the first concern of the Torah is the prevention of poverty. There might be reasons to prevent extreme wealth as well, but if it never brought along extreme poverty with it, I don't think it would be such a concern. So the Torah doesn't want... We don't want people displaced from their land. It's a bad thing. So Bailam HaRishonim is a societal value. That's what the Rishonim say. One of the Rishonim says this here. It doesn't get that whole hot dhamma, but he says that it's inherent value. So Vasisa Yashar Vatov of Dina de Bar Mitzvah is one value, but so is people retaining their original land. And therefore, when it comes to Dina de Bar Mitzvah, if you sell it to the Bailam HaRishonim, the Matzron cannot come and claim and say, okay, but I'm taking that, it's mine. The verse is true as well. If the Matzron buys it, the Bailam HaRishonim now comes and says, I want to buy my land back, the Matzron can say no, because, again, there are different goods being weighed against one another. Dina de Bar Mitzvah is when we have basically an unmitigated good and a neutral. So the answer is, let's increase the sum of good in the world. But if it's a choice of choosing between one good for Nisan and one good for Ari, well, whoever gets there first, they're different goods. Okay.
Is it only Yisrael?
The Din of Yovel?
And the Din of Bar Mitzvah.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
It's not a function of
wanting to have people not flow to Maine is there?
The point, you know, I've been asked this question. The dean of Shemitah and Yovel and Ribbis only apply to Jews, and Summit only applies in Eretz Yisrael. So does that at least Hasar Sadas V'Yovel? So does that mean that that's all that only place it's relevant? It's, of course it's not the only place that it's relevant. When you want to understand, you can argue about the details, but when you want to understand what the Rabbono Shalom's vision of an economically just society is, so presumably what the Rabbono Shalom gave the Klal Yisrael at Har Sinai in his Torah was his vision for an economically just society. How you apply that outside of Eretz Yisrael and the Pratim, how you apply that in a capital society as opposed to an agricultural society, one can have a legitimate discussion. But one first has to understand what the Torah was aiming to construct in Eretz Yisrael. By the way, Klal Yisrael never really observed it, right? That's what the Nevi'im criticized them. That's why they Korban Bayis Rishon, the 7 years of Golos, because they didn't keep Shemitah. Right? We can see that they didn't let the Eved Ibris go. Right? It's clear they probably weren't keeping Yovel. They weren't returning the Sados. I don't know. Ribbis, I don't know. You can't. From Yecheskel, might have been that some people did charge Ribbis. So that works on some level in agricultural society. You know, Ribbis, for example, when we use a hetheriska, you couldn't function in a capital society without interest. Now, you could say there's a difference between interest and what they call usury, right, with crazy interest. But the point is that you can say that we are not going to violate halacha, we're going to observe it technically with hetheriska, but you still have to ask yourself, what is the message that the Torah was sending? So, I'm not being fair, I should make one comment. The Torah Tamima notes, ask the question, how can we use a heteriskas and a harama to violate Torah law? And his answer is, because Torah law in that respect was really primarily aimed at an agricultural society, where when you, in an agricultural society, you lend primarily as an act of chesed, and to charge interest on that is a midara, and therefore the Torah prohibits taking interest. But when you live in a society whose basis is capital, when you extend capital loans, in most cases, you're not extending it because someone is in need of food and has to get through this agricultural season. You're extending it so they can then use that to make money. So it's almost as if it's more like what a heteriska is. It's more like a partner, business partnership, but in terms that technically would violate Ribbis, and therefore we use the heteriska. So I think that the aim is that everyone should have a socially just society, and the Torah provides a certain kind of a blueprint. There are certain values and messages embedded in that, and then you have to translate them into when you're in another society, in another place. Reasonable people can disagree about some of the details of the translation, but it's criminal from a Torah perspective not to first ask, what's the Torah's vision? What was the Ribbono Shel Olam's vision in Eretz Yisrael in an agricultural society? And then we can debate, how do you translate that into other contexts? Because it wouldn't, but there was no capital society when the Torah was given. Why does the Torah, when it lists the animals that have chew their cud but don't have split hooves, why does the Torah not list a llama? Why? The Ribbono Shel Olam didn't know? Chas v'shalom. So why does the Torah not list it? No, isn't that Akasha? In fact, there's a Gemara Chulam, which might be problematic, but I think we can ignore the Gemara Chulam about that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't a Tzayed. But you see, the Torah was from Ribbono Shel Olam, because how Moshe Rabbeinu have known that these were animals? Yeah, except for it left out a llama. So what's the answer? At most, I think. What's that? Yeah. How's the Torah going to describe an animal nobody's ever seen? That's what Dibur Torah, Dibur Kasa Behova is. That's why it's oxen, going oxen, not people hitting each other with cars. Because Dibur Torah, Kalasha Bereada, Dibur Kasa Behova. So the Torah described, there was no, you didn't have capital society the way you have today. You didn't have any commerce, but it was primarily an agricultural world. So the Torah, you know, can't describe, it give you a set of laws to what it's going to be like when you have a stock exchange, because it didn't exist. So the Torah gives you a vision in Eretz Yisrael at the time the Jews were given the Torah, when we enter Eretz Yisrael, and our responsibility is to translate. And as I said, people, reasonable people, can disagree on the translation, but you can't disagree on the Ikar itself. So there is value in people not having to divest themselves from their primary assets, and their primary assets, at least Bisman Hazal, still was karka. In fact, one of the things that you see, any of you know this, what can an Isha collect her ksuba from, according to Ikar HaDin, Din of the Mishnah, Din of the Gemara? Well, yes, but what types of things can she collect from, of the husband? Only karka. Only karka. You can't collect ksuba from a talithon. Except there's a takara sagaonim to allow women to collect ksubas from mitalthalim, because Jews were no longer owning karka ubiquitously. And therefore, the ksuba would have fallen apart without that. Right? Jews in the medieval era, for the most part, didn't own karka. That's why Rashi has a shayla, Truvas Rashi, about how do you tax vineyards? Not because, as one famous Jewish historian who once taught in the institution a long time ago wrote, because that was a shayla to Rashi's mother. His name was Leah, so Rashi was a vintner. Yes, that's where it comes from, that one tshuva. It's absurd. Rashi was not a vintner. The fact that you had a shayla indicated it wasn't typical for Jews to have real estate holdings. Real estate holdings meant agriculture, because otherwise everybody would have known how you taxed it. And everybody knew how you taxed regular commercial business stuff. But you didn't know how you taxed karka commonly, because not too many Jews were farmers. So, and where Rashi lived, can't grow grapes, according to Dr. Soloveitchik. So, the point is that Jews, once upon a time, Bizman HaGemara still owned karka, and was standard, and then at a certain point they no longer did. So, ksuba had to be adjusted. So, all of the halachos have to be, sometimes halachos just don't, they don't exist, they don't apply, but we're obligated not only to observe the halachos, but observe the values of halachos. So, you have to figure out, Gabe, you have to extrapolate from the laws that we have in a particular system and say, how do we create a similar society? So here, Chazal say, in Dina de Bar Mitzvah, it's still agricultural, but there's no Yovel anymore. But even though there's no Yovel in Dina de Bar Mitzvah, there's adifus to getting the Bailam Rishonim, get that karka back. So not enough to be Mesalik the Matzron if the Matzron bought it already, but the Matzron can't be Mesalik the Bailam Rishonim if they bought it already. Okay. Next. I'm just going to tell you, what I just said is probably more important than any lumdus that we've discussed the entire year. Okay, go ahead. Okay, if you buy from a guy, or you sell to a guy, there is no Dina de Bar Mitzvah. Now the Gemara explains. Zvan me'akum. Okay, Mimetzra, probably, yeah. So, firstly, in principle, should the Dina de Bar Mitzvah buy if I buy it from a guy? So this Gemara might be the clearest indication of who Dina de Bar Mitzvah is on, right? Because there are really two ways to think about Dina de Bar Mitzvah, and we've shown and point this out, that it's clear which way it goes. You could say Dina de Bar Mitzvah is the obligation of the mocher. I'm selling my land, I can sell it to Nisim, who will benefit extra. I can sell it to Gabe, who won't get the extra benefit. So why should I choose to sell it to Gabe? Let go Gabe, go buy a field elsewhere. And I am obligated, if I want to sell my field, and one of the potential buyers who's paying full price is Nisim, I'm obligated to sell it to him, because it will create more good in the world. Alternatively, you could say, no, as the mocher, I have no obligations. I sell my field, and there's no Dina de Bar Mitzvah on me. But Dina de Bar Mitzvah rests upon the buyer. Gabe, why are you going to buy this field? Buy a different field. Let Nisim buy this field. It's better for the world. As a mocher, I have no say in Dina de Bar Mitzvah, as long as I don't stand to lose anything. And as a lokeach, as long as you can get what is equal, so you are you have to do so. Now, the nafkamina between these two choices is, what if the seller or the buyer is a guy? Because a guy is not obligated in Dina de Bar Mitzvah. The pasuk of Asista Yashar Vatov is not, even if it's enforceable sometimes against another Jew, Vasisa Hayashar Vatov does not apply to a guy. It's not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs Ben Noach. Goyim have din, they don't have Lefne Mishras Adin. So, if you say that it's based upon the mocher, that the mocher is not allowed to sell unless if he has a choice to sell to the Matzron. So if the guy is selling the land and I want to buy it, there's no Dina de Bar Mitzvah whatsoever, because it's upon the seller. But that's not the way we pasuk, and we assume, and that's why the Gemara doesn't say that way, that it's on the lokeach. So that means it doesn't matter really who's selling the karka. If the goy is selling karka, and either Nisim can buy it or Gabe can buy it, so Gabe, you have to let Nisim buy the karka. If the Gemara has replied. The question is, why not? So the Gemara says, because you can say, Yechavrusa, Ari Avrachalach. Guess what? The goy, he's not a good guy. You don't want to be want him in the neighborhood. He's, you know, he's irresponsible when it comes to Nezek, see the Mishnah Bava Kama. So, you know what? I did you a favor, Nisim. Stop complaining. So that's what the Gemara says. He can say, Ari Avrachalach. So the Rush has a great question. The Rush says, because Gabe, you did one Tova for Nisim, therefore you shouldn't do another? Supposing the Rush gives us mashal. He says, supposing an ani comes to you, and he needs clothing. He's barely clothed, and he's starving. Can I say, listen, I gave you clothing. I don't have to feed you. That's ridiculous. So Gabe, just because you did one tova by getting the nachri off of Nisan's boundary, why should you have to? Why then can you also not say? Why don't you say dina de bar metzer? What does that mean? Ari avrachalach. Rashi writes, ein lecha yashar tov mizeh. I mean, yeah, you did a good thing. What, Vasisa Yashar Vatov? As opposed to Hayisharim Vatovin, you only have to do one? So the Rush gives an answer that I showed to a couple of you. I don't know if any of you saw. I don't know if the Rush gives the answer. The Shita Mekubetis first quotes the Rush. I found the Rush in the Tosas Rush who asked the question. The answer I didn't see given there. But the answer to the question, Rami, what did it sound like the Rush was saying? Or whoever was saying it, the Shita Mekubetis? Osefa mitzvah, patra mitzvah. As if, at the time I buy the land from the guy, I am engaged in the mitzvah losamet al dam reyecha. For me, mekayim losamet al dam reyecha. I'm getting this big bad guy far away from you. And now, that's the time when I buy it is when I'm mekayim that mitzvah. And at that time. I'm not chayav to do any other mitzvahs at the same time. So since I'm mekayim lo samal adam reyecha, I don't have to do vasisa yashar vatov, I'm potter. And once I don't have to do it b'shas hanekach, I don't have to do it again. That's when vasisa yashar vatov really is chal. If you think about it, it's true. What is Gabe not supposed to do? He's not supposed to buy it. If Gabe does buy it, and dina d'mametzer were to apply, what would it mean when Gabe bought it? What would it mean, Ephraim? He's my shaliach. He's buying it for me now. Dina de bar metzvah might really apply, even the mafreya, at the time that Gabe buys the field. Right? If you say that Gabe becomes nisim shaliach, it's chal then. I find this hard to believe that this is true, but it sounds like what it's saying is, because at the time Gabe bought the field, he was engaged in a different mitzvah, being mavriach the ari, from nisim's land, therefore he's potter from vasisar shavatov. It sounds like osif a mitzvah, potter min a mitzvah. Right? Which is really strange because, for so many reasons, but amongst them, on a technical level, we only say a mitzvah, patam and a mitzvah. It's the actual time shit. Yeah. That's a question, Gabe? What's that? Okay, Ephraim? Why? Even from the guy? Buying from another Jew, I don't think it's a mitzvah. There is an idea, because you probably are thinking about the Gemara in Gittin and that test about Amir al-Akum is mutter for sure. Everybody agrees that one place it's mutter is to have the sharos done so you're buying karka from the guy in Eretz Yisrael. But that's because you're taking the hands of the guy and putting it into Jewish hands. If that's what you mean, that could be another mitzvah here, but that wouldn't apply in Chutz La'aretz. Okay, but Chutz La'aretz still osam el adam recha either way. Yeah. So, very interesting. Okay, but now what about on the second half? Go ahead. Continue, Ali Melech. Right, so there's no question. If I sell it to a guy, there's no issue whatsoever dealing with the bar mitzvah. The guy is it's on the lokeach, and this is the proof. It's on the lokeach, and the guy is not mitzvah and vasisei asher vatov. However, there's a little problem with me, which is I'm setting up a danger. So the Gemara says, but you will put me selling to the guy in Cherem until or unless. The asila imech masay. In other words, I basically sold to a dangerous neighbor, which could create headaches for you. I have to, in order to avoid being put in the chayrim, I have to accept upon myself to pay for any of the damages. I think there's a ra'ah that's quoted in the Shita Mekubesas here, who says, by every grama by nizakin, you may not be chayv to pay a grama by nizakin, but if you have a grama there and you refuse to remove it, we'll put you in chayrim until you either remove it or until you agree to pay for the damage that it does. Really interesting. Really, that in some ways it's an earth-shattering comment. The Gemara has a very specific manifestation of this by God. I don't think the Gemara, in all the second parak, when they talk about Gram ben Izakin, I don't think anybody says that Gram ben Izakin would put you in Chayrim. Right? Even the cases, there are four cases where a person is Potter b'dini Adam b'chayv b'dini Shemayim. I still don't think we put a person in Chayrim for that. But here, if you don't accept upon yourself the potential nesek that the guy does, you will be Chayrim. But the Ra'ah says this is a broad principle, not just narrow, limited to this circumstance. Also, an interesting comment to Tosus here, which is, this only applies if a Jew is willing to give you the same price as the guy, which is kind of interesting, because, you mean, if the hooligan is willing to give me the best price for my karka, I can invite him into the neighborhood because he gives me a few extra dollars? Right? In other words, that also says, on some level, that because I could sell to a Jew and I sell to a guy, that I'm responsible because I had a choice. Whereas, if nobody's willing to give me the price that the guy is giving me, so then it's not fair to ask me to sacrifice, and therefore I don't even have to accept upon myself, you know, responsibility for the guy doing it, right? This is much less than a grama ben izakin in certain ways. A grama ben izakin is when I do something passively, I set up a situation passively where my stuff, my property, is doing damage to you, but in a way that I'm not chayav an ezek. Here, the guy is an independent actor. The guy acts on his own, so why am I chayav for that? So really, it's a kind of weird, I'll call it a midas chasidus, of forcing you, threatening to put you in chayrim unless you accept the damages that you really should be chayv for. But Tosa says that's only if you can get the same sale from a Jew when you choose to sell it to a guy. Okay. I don't want to start mashkanta, because mashkanta is complicated. So we'll start with mashkanta tomorrow. Maybe I will send you some Rishonim to torture yourselves over. Mashkanta, some interesting stuff in Mashkanta, because a Mashkon, the question, there are a few stages of Mashkon you can ask the question about Dina de Bar Mitzvah. Gabe, a question?
I had a question on this Rashi.
Yeah.
Rashi calls Dina de Bar Mitzvah.
Dina de Bar Mitzvah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dina de Bar Mitzvah. Yes. They don't call it Midas Sodom. In other words, I think that it's probably not called Midas Sodom because, firstly, there's effort that I have to make. Right? I have to go apply another piece of karka. There might be reasons, I might even come up with a reason why I like this karka better, which might work to say in Kofan Midas Sodom, but not to override Dina de Bar Mitzvah. Real Dina de Bar Mitzvah, right? Now, the cases we dealt with in the first parak of Mabasra were not real cases of Dina de Bar Mitzvah, in the sense that someone had a chelek in the karka already. Right? In other words, when Shutfim are dividing or Achim are dividing up something, you're asking to actually forego something which, before we even get into the discussion, I have rights in. Here, when you're going to buy the karka, which is the time at which Dina de Bar Mitzvah really sets in, you don't have any rights to that karka right now. So Kofan Amid Sodom is a much bigger deal than Dina de Bar Mitzvah. But Dina de Bar Mitzvah, for other reasons, I think is assumed to be a takana, because by right, those things that you could say, you might like this piece of karka, right? It's convenient for you, even if it's Amid Mitzvah. So I think that's why. I think everybody agrees. Everybody agrees that Dina... What's that? Well, the Pasas Nas Matha, it's just that the Kofan part is... Dina de Bar Mitzvah, what's unique about Dina de Bar Mitzvah is that it's a din. It's kofen on it, even though the mokar is which almost by definition, the flimishers of din should generally not be, you know, enforceable.
The mokar
should sell it to the matzoran, and the other guy shouldn't buy it from the mokar. He should let the matzoran buy it. That's Midoraisa, I think, equally on both of them, because it's a CSA Ashravato. The takana de rabbanon is that kofanon on the lokeach, that kofanon dina de bar mitzvah. Yeah.
So